On to our next session. Deakin University is running this amazing program called Sexual Lives and Respectful Relationships. And I won't go into too much about what all that's about, but I would like to welcome Dr. Amy O'Shea, Monica Wellington, and Linda Stocco. Thank you.
Bang, bang, we're here. Hi, everyone. And to begin with, we all would like to just acknowledge that we're here on the land of the Kulin Nations and pay our respects to elders past and present and emerging. And we also graciously acknowledge any Aboriginal people who are here today in the room or online. And we all give you our thanks for the generous way that you've shared knowledge, including in the earlier presentation today, which enriches what we all can do and how we can continue to do it. We also acknowledge the Auslan interpreters that are working hard alongside us.
Welcome. My name is Linda Stocco. And my two colleagues is Amy and Monica that works with me because I'm a peer educator for this program.
Thank you. So we want to tell you a little bit about what sexual lives and respectful relationships is. Do you want to start us off?
It's a program at work with peer educators that's got an intellectual disability. We work around sexual, our rights, and respectful relationships, and violence and abuse as well. Mm-hmm. And we work with other organisations that'll come up a bit later in the, as well. I'll talk a bit more about that. One of us will. called Program Partners, and they work with the peer education, their peers, in the program.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And they work together to run the program.
Yeah, to run the program and work everything out. Yep.
So here's an image that if you've seen us speak before, you've probably slash definitely seen before. Linda, what is it?
The onion.
We call this our onion, and one of the peer educators from Gippsland, Emily, called it that because it's got lots of layers. Yeah. Do you want to tell people, Linda, about what's here at the middle, the inner circle of the model?
That's for peer educators. Mm. It works in the program as a peer. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And what about the next one?
And the other one is Learning Partners. They work with like other people, like it could be program partners, could be like a family member, could be anyone. Mm. You can work with Learning Partners.
If you want to ask someone to help you with what you learn in the program. Mm-hmm. Yep. And the blue one?
The other one is for program partners, like all the organisations that come in and help in the being the program and helps with the peers, mm-hmm. and that when we do run the program. Mm.
And the outside
and
then, one.
And the other one is like our researching, like we do researching and evaluation. We do a lot of researching and that in things, different things like our program, what we're doing, and other researchers, what we do other as well, we work with.
Mm. Yep. Thanks, Linda. So if anyone's seen an ecological model or the ecological approach to violence and abuse prevention, you would recognise this kind of onion idea. And that's the way that we think about our work, starting at the middle with the individual and working out through the layers with which they interact. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Linda, for explaining it. What we know, particularly at that white point at the middle is that in our practice, working with peer educators for, how long have you been a peer educator?
10 years.
10 years, yeah. So over the last decade of really leading this work and evaluating and understanding how it happens, we know that peer education from its beginning challenges people's ideas about capacity. It also challenges ideas about knowledge. Who's allowed to have knowledge? And who and how are they allowed to share it? So there's a guy called Freire who wrote about democratizing education. Education doesn't belong up there. We all have access to it and we can all share it. And what makes somebody an expert or have the right to educate? And we will talk in a little bit about some ways that we've worked across particular groups of people within the program. Another little bit from me to tell you about that outer layer of the onion, which is the research that we do around understanding this model and the practices and experiences of people at all stages across the model. We know that key elements for success can be summarised in this five-piece puzzle. And we want to show you that because we see a number of you and the roles that you're in fitting into these really clearly. The writing's a bit small, I'm sorry, but the top one there says cross-sector partnerships. And when Linda tells you more about the program partners and the partner organisations we work with, you'll see really clearly how important those connections are. Linking targeted programs to the mainstream, but also that bottom one, which is red, that says champions and drivers. One of the things which has been essential to the success of this kind of approach has been people who pick up this work and go, hey, this is important, and we're going to keep doing it. And Linda's one of those people as a peer educator who's been committed for 10 years, but also a number of program partners and partner organisations have worked with us for that long as well, haven't they?
Sort of all lesser.
Yeah, yeah, and really being committed to this work as well. What we've learned, and then after this I'm going to stop telling you about research, but I'm a researcher so I can't help it. What we've learned from our work, our work alongside the model over the last 10 years is that what we have seen is that taking this approach, taking a peer education approach which centralises the lives and experiences of people with intellectual disability, means that we can even talk about sexuality, violence and abuse in people's lives differently. It immediately shifts the way that discussions are held. We also have learned that everyone's always learning. And because we have 10 years of work now, we're really able to see how that learning gets deeper and more enriched as people's commitment continues and as new people come in. And Linda, you've trained, I don't even know how many peer educators you would have trained.
I can't remember.
No.
Was that many?
Yeah.
And even program partners too.
And you've seen people you've trained now work alongside you, give presentations with you.
Yeah.
So learning continues and enriches. We also have seen that the partnerships that happen between people with intellectual disability and community professionals show how people with intellectual disability can have their own say about sexuality, violence and abuse in their lives. That people are actually a rightful and essential part of work, all work and any work that is about them and of their local communities. That people are sexual beings with sexual agency. And that intellectual disability also will intersect with other identities, for example, around culture, our sexuality.
Oh. So, you go?
No, you can go.
So here it demonstrates how many different partner organisations who have partnered with us and work with us in sexual lives and respectful relationships.
Oh, we've got that many.
Yeah, we do.
We've worked with, like, people like South West CASA against sexual assault and family violence, councils and Synapse.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of places.
Yeah, a lot of different background that, and backgrounds of work that people work in, and they all come together and work together in the program. Mm-hmm. And they all bring different information from their backgrounds, which works in a really collaborative way, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah. And then they try and put it into our program.
Yeah. Yeah. So partner organisations is a term that we use to describe the workplace that the program partners work at.
Yeah, and they help the peer educators and work with the peer educators with working out when they do the program, like where they're going to have their venues and all the other stuff, like, and their fundings, like find all that.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's all their job to do.
Yeah. Why do you think it's, or what do you think program partners get out of working with in sexual lives and respectful relationships?
At least they get to know how to do the program with a person that's got an intellectual disability and working with, like, a peer educator.
Then
they get to know the program and that, and then they work, and then they'll get to know the person they're working with as well.
People have told us that they've gained some insight when they've worked with SL and RR, and they also learn a little bit about rights.
Yep.
And sexuality rights and relationship rights. And then what they've done and what they've found is that they've taken that information back to the people that they work with, and they've shared that information, and that's been a good thing for them and their organisations as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking of an example of that, and one that comes to mind is West CASA, which is the Centre Against Sexual Assault, which runs sort of around Melbourne's West, and we had a sexual lives and respect for relationships site that was sort of based around Footscray area and auspiced by CoHealth.
Mm-hmm.
And the counsellor advocate from the CASA who was connected with the site there was asked to go and give a presentation to a professional group. And where she said, where normally I would just have gone and done that, I now thought of another way that I could do it, and I could approach the peer educators I work with in this site and ask if anyone was interested in coming with me. So we've talked about capacity building and increasing the ability of services to engage with people. I think that's a really nice example of how that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens at local levels, so communities engage with communities.
And we've dug up the numbers a little bit, and we've found that there's been over 70 partner organisations connected over the time of SL and RR. And around the same numbers of peer educators as well. And they work together in things that we called sites. Do you want to explain what sites are?
Like all different, like sites, like the council.
Yep.
Worked with them. SIMAT. SIMAT.
Yeah.
They're like an organisation that works with people with brain injuries.
And different locations that run sexual lives and respect for relationships, and they're all over Australia.
Yeah. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Bendigo, Gippsland. Morwell. The Morwell. The slip bowl, what did you call it? The peninsula.
Yep. Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Sydney.
Sydney, yeah.
You train people in Hobart.
Yeah, Hobart.
Burnie.
Try to train people in Geelong, where I live.
Yeah,
all over Australia.
Everywhere.
So we've started a project with Synapse, and Synapse mm-hmm. is the Brain Injury Organisation of Australia, and they're based mm-hmm. up in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
This little project came about because there was an information session for sexual lives and respect for relationships in Sydney, and it was at MDA, which is the Multicultural Disability Advocacy Association, and it was an information session for all different people, anyone who was interested in sexual lives and respectful relationships, to come along and just learn a little bit more about what it was about. And there was a person there from Synapse, and she came up and she said, "This is fantastic, we really want to do this, but how it is at the moment doesn't quite work for us." So they went away and they gathered some funding, and they gathered an ILC grant funding, and then we partnered with them to do some research and develop a program, a sexualized and respectful relationships program for and people with brain injury.
And then we trained this group as well.
Yeah.
We trained them, and they are coming, I think they're about to start to do a training to train other people as well in brain injury.
Yeah. Yeah, the project's been happening for about a year now. And it started off with some research. So it started off with a literature review, which kind of found out that people with brain injury are considered in more of a medical model. There's not a lot, there hasn't been a lot of programs or a lot of things out there that talk about people's relationships and people's sexual lives in a really personal and personhood way. And then the next stage of the research was about a narrative research process where we collected some stories from people with brain injury about their sexuality and their relationships.
Yeah, we did 4 stories about people with a brain injury, and we trained the people was in it, and we did the stories with them and that. And when we done another activity thing called Reach In and Reach Out, so that I can reach out to people and go to other communication like places.
Yeah, yep. In the program, we use some activities alongside the stories to really develop learning from the stories. But we developed some new activities like the reaching and reaching out activity. And that was because some of the themes that were coming up in the stories were different to what we'd seen in the past, and they were around mental health and taking care of yourself.
Mm.
So that reaching in's about
like self-care.
So in the site, how many people in that site did we train?
I think it was 3 peer educators and 3 program partners.
Yeah. And they're about to run a program. Which is fantastic. We're keen to hear how they go. When we were doing working with the site and through the research, we noticed there was a bit of a gap there's an opportunity to do some work with people who don't have a single incident brain injury or people who don't identify as having a brain injury. So that's some kind of future work that we're interested in that might come about.
So another thing that we've got to explore through this program was in partnership with Inclusion Melbourne and with funding from Pride Foundation Australia, which is used to be called Gay and Lesbian Foundation Australia. And they wanted, Inclusion Melbourne asked us to look particularly at piloting a version of the program which was particularly by, for and about LGBTIQ people with intellectual disability. So we did that, and the first step, again, just like with Synapse, was to conduct a research project and make sure that we were hearing the voices and stories of LGBTIQ people with intellectual disability. And we did that, and 2 of the stories that were produced, there's a few little excerpts from here on the screen, and we'll talk about those in a sec with Linda, but those stories, along with other stories and some of our existing activities, were used in a program which we ran at Inclusion Melbourne, and you can see the advertising flyer there. We ran that with the support of Southeastern Centre Against Sexual Assault and some of our peer educators. All of the training team were LGBTIQ people with LGBTIQ identified people. And it was also evaluated by the University of Melbourne. So if you're keen to read evaluations, you'll find that in our report on our website. The picture on the far right here is something that was produced shortly after the program by one of the participants who found the messages in the program really powerful and went home and created that on her computer. So we share that with pride in her work and as a way of also sharing her voice. The stories that were produced for that pilot don't just stay in a separate pilot, they've been incorporated into our program to ensure that it is also diverse and inclusive. Alongside that, we did a review of our program materials and manual to make sure that it It explicitly respected all relationships, all genders, and all sexualities. Mm-hmm. So the two stories that we've put up here are from Carol and Jono. And Linda, the Carol says something about how sex ed at school wasn't much good, doesn't she?
She might have didn't want to learn about it.
Mm. And she feels like it wasn't for her.
No.
It was about straight people, so she just didn't listen. Yeah.
Because she's a lesbian.
Mm. So when we read Carol's story at the pilot group, everyone in the room, of all genders, went, yes, that's me too, I felt like that. And so an action that we did as a result was we invited Thorn Harbour Health to come and give us their sex ed program. So there was dams and there was condom and there was lube and there were questions. And it was an amazing, amazing, empowering thing for everybody. So we discovered that was a way that we could really ensure that information's available to people. Jono talks about a couple of things that we really learnt from.
Yeah, he's a guy that's gay, and he likes to get back into a relationship with a guy, but there's one guy doesn't like him talking about he's gay, and that's Laurie. Mm. There's a staff member, and that doesn't like the idea.
So Jono lives in a house where staff, paid staff, support him, and he says, yeah, you can't talk about being gay in front of Laurie. He also talks about not feeling safe in public and worrying about being down the street and being abused or yelled at or being called slur words or terms that made him feel unsafe.
Yeah, sometimes they call him.
He also talks about some nice things, doesn't he? He talks about, here's that friend, and I forget the name that we gave his friend, but they go out for coffee and they...
I think it's Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he wants to get back, because I think they had a relationship and I think he wants to get back with him, but I don't know how it's going to happen, see?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So let's talk a bit more about what is in Sexual Lives and Respect for Relationships. So how many sessions is it, Linda?
We have four sessions.
And each of the sessions covers a different theme.
Like, yeah, they have all different themes of what the session's like. And we have, like, we've got six stories in it. We used to have only four or five. But we've gone up and had six, and now we talk about stories in our program every session. There's always a story in every session, the four sessions, and we talk about them.
What do we always say before we introduce a story? Did we make up the stories?
No, they're not. They're real stories, but the person that's in the story is just like we act like there's actors in it when you show the video, and the names are all changed, where they live is all changed, and that.
And after the stories,
we always have key messages after it. Like, there's all different key messages about the story.
How did we make the key messages?
I remember doing some of these messages. Like, we used to go through the story, and then we used to have to pick out what good messages that would go good with that message, and we used to like work it all out for all different areas in the story.
Yeah, we spoke to lots of different people to get their input on developing the key messages, so they're nice and rounded and they have different perspectives. And they're actually always in evolution. They're always changing and evolving as we go along, aren't they?
Yeah, we get them changed.
And then after the key messages?
Then sometimes we do like activities and that, like after we might do, like we talk about our rights and we do like an activity with rights cards, and or like if there's a story about sexual assault in it, we always have a booklet, we've got a booklet about sexual assault when sex is not okay. We always have someone from a CASA, from sexual assault centres, to talk a bit about that if things like that are in stories.
Yep.
And then we've got a, like another little activity we usually have in relationship cards, they're called, and we do like talk about all different relationships and things.
Yep. Some of the other activities as well are about being safe online.
Oh, the danger cards, dealing with danger cards. We play a little activity with that.
And we talk about self-care.
Yeah.
And also about gender and sexual diversities as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we always have some information at the end of each session, which tells people about where they can go to get more information or to get help if there's anything else that they want information about.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the guidelines for the sessions are in
the manual.
Manual? Yeah. How thick is the manual?
It's very thick.
Yeah. It's a big book, isn't it?
Yeah. It's lucky I didn't bring it.
Yeah, we didn't bring one along, but we can probably share if you're interested. But it's a big, thick book that just has...
It should be on the website, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it's fun to be a bit provocative, isn't it? And having said all of that, I would also say that we don't actually teach anybody anything. And we say that really deliberately because there is a fairly monotone idea about sexuality when it comes to people with intellectual disability, which is that they exist sort of as empty vessels which wiser people than they have to fill up. And we reject that idea. We reject it clearly through the use and the value of peer education, but more than that, through a really poor set of educational principles, two of which I just want to mention. One is that Linda has just given some amazing examples of the kind of discussions which are peer-led and allow for adult learning principles to take place. The second, if you can remember, is just some of the organisations that were on that slide of program partner organisations, such as Bendigo Community Health, for example, mm-hmm. are and contain the experts on our program partners from there are sexual health nurses, mm. the men's and women's sexual health nurses. So just like any of us, if I need specific advice from a sexual health nurse, I'll go and ask a sexual health nurse.
Mm.
And the organisation which houses and employs that sexual health nurse will support me as they should support anybody else. So the principle is that we all access expertise from the experts. There's not a special break-off point, which is weirdly alluded to an idea of IQ. Thank you. Soapbox off for now. Keep doing that.
Our rights cards, these are always come up in our program. We always talk about these all the time in our program because they're important about a person's got an intellectual disability, got to have rights, and they're very important and that. And we're thinking about doing a little activity with our rights cards.
Mm-hmm. Where the rights cards come from?
We got these from a person called Anne Craft a long time ago in the 90s.
Yep.
Sort of research.
She was the first person back in the UK in the 90s to stop talking about all the deficits that people with intellectual disability have and to start saying, hang on, people have rights. And that just shifted the way that sexuality could be talked about for people with intellectual disability. And when we first started working together, Linda, 10 years ago, you and I and Patsy Frawley and Janice Slattery, who's a self-advocate that... I imagine some people know, retired now,
Danny,
unfortunately.
Danny
from WISE, Women's Health
in the North.
Yeah. We loved these because we thought, yes, rights is where we need to start this discussion. But we went through a lot of discussion making them in more plain English.
yep.
didn't we? So these aren't Ancraft's words. We have turned them into plain English and come up with images and ways of explaining them that yep. we thought were more accessible.
Yeah. And they look a bit better. Because I remember I had to take photos sometimes.
Yeah, they've been improved over the years. Yeah. So we'd really like to hear from you now. We'd like to, I'm going to hand over to Linda in a second. Monica's going to be her assistant. But we're going to invite Linda to run a shortened version of the rights card activity that we would run in a program.
Mm-hmm.
So Linda's going to put her peer educator trainer hat on, and we're going to look for three people who are willing, you can do it from your seat, but three people who are willing to join in when Linda gets to that point. So maybe put your hand up if you are, and Monica will be able to come round to you. And we have a mic or a phone. Awesome, thank you. All right.
So which one who are we going to pick?
Do you want to read them out loud first?
Right. This one. To be able to do these things without other people stopping you. To make your own decisions about relationships. Mm-hmm. To be sexual.
Mm-hmm. So what are we going to ask people to volunteer to do?
To talk about one of these cards.
Mm. What
like if someone picked whatever card and they want to, they can talk about that card.
Okay.
What it's about and that.
So what they think about it or...
Yeah, what they could think about it and things like that.
Yep. Yep. So their experience or work or...
Yeah, it could be anything.
Cool. All right. Awesome. So should we ask for any brave volunteers to put up their hands?
We've got one.
Hey, we've got Jay.
It depends which card they
got
want.
Some plants in the audience. I love it.
There's one up the back too. You can pick one the other way. Okay.
And Linda, there was someone down there.
Well, I've got the mic, so I'll go first. So mine is to be able to do these things without other people stopping you. And then do you just want me to talk about what that means for me?
Personally? Could be about you or whoever.
Yeah. I guess as a person with a disability, growing up with a disability, going to special school, we didn't really have much sex ed. I definitely wasn't LGBTIQ, so I really relate to that point before. And because no one ever talked about this stuff, it took me a long time to think that I could do any of this stuff in my life. And there was a lot of people that were scared and wanted to stop me expressing my sexuality and, yeah. So I think that's really powerful for a lot of people with disabilities to think what that means and what they might want to do. If you're not given those options a lot, it's hard to think through what that might look like and where to go to get people to be your allies in that space.
Yeah.
Yeah. The end. Off my soapbox.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to have company on the soapbox sometimes.
So I have the card that says people with disabilities have the right to be sexual. And I think for me, this card, it means so many different things. One of them being, I guess, that throughout my experience of working with disabled people is that people are often denied the basic right to have relationships. due to many different reasons, and it's sometimes due to fear, due to sometimes just geographical distance, due to people living in segregated environments, and often this fear is based on the fact that people think that there is a lack of capacity, what you sort of touched on before, and that there's this notion of people with an intellectual disability particularly being childlike, and that if you are, you know, although you're an adult, but because you're childlike, therefore the same rights don't apply. So obviously people with a disability have the same rights as anyone else to have relationships and to be sexual. Often, particularly when people live in, for example, in supported residential units, might often be prevented from having boyfriends and girlfriends and partners and whatnot, and for them to stay over. So it's very difficult to have a relationship when you can't have your partner come over and to stay over. So that's a barrier often for people who live in those types of environments, unfortunately. Or that they might be, you know, they might need to seek permission, whether it's from a parent or from some sort of caregiver, to have a boyfriend or to be able to have a sexual relationship. And obviously that's not right either, because when you, you know, when you're an adult and you're a consenting adult, you can have relationships with whoever you want to have. So that's what this card sort of represents to me, but I could talk more, but I won't, so someone else can have a say.
So the card I got is people with disabilities have the right to make your own decisions about relationships. So this is not entirely relevant, but I had a little nephew with a profound intellectual disability. He was just hitting puberty, and I remember the doctors and nurses who worked with him were very worried that once he hit puberty, he would start to do things in public that would upset other people. And I remember thinking that he would grow into a young man and he would have the right to do what he liked as long as it didn't hurt other people. And I hope that other people who work with young men like my nephew or anybody else remember that it's everybody's right to do what they like as long as they're not hurting other people.
Thank you.
Thanks for reading the cards out. Yeah. Thanks for that.
Great work. And we've got time for a chat, which is great.
And time for questions if there's a interested in giving us some questions.
Yeah. Over to you. Any questions? Linda, do you want to be the MC here? I caught eye contact with this guy, so I'm going to ask him.
Thank you for sharing all your experiences and great learnings. And I had a question about which areas are you working in around Victoria?
Do you want to say where our Victorian sites are?
We've got Sydney.
In Victoria, we've got...
Oh, Victoria. It's to be Melbourne. Mm-hmm. We've got Geelong.
Mm-hmm. We've got a few in Melbourne, don't we?
Yeah, a few in the north area of Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
The west of Melbourne.
Yep. And the southeast.
And the southeast.
We've got Bendigo.
Bendigo.
And Gippsland.
Gippsland.
Yeah.
Mm. So quite a big coverage.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of self-interest in this question because REAC's currently involved in a peer sort of education and group project in the Horsham area. So I was wondering if you'd be willing to either recommend or travel for a future project sometime in the next 12 months. Well, let's talk after then. Thank you.
Don't mind, there you go.
I'm Jeanette from Urella. How do you go about with assisting people with disabilities that say, you know, I just want to have sex and not necessarily, you know, have a relationship. You know, they want, you know, maybe to have some sexual experiences and like going to brothels and stuff like that.
So as Linda said, the program runs over four sessions, and our aim in doing in delivering the program is to share our focus on rights and the right for people to have the kind of sexual expression, relationship expression that matters to them. And so,
and they're going to be respectable.
Right, and respectful relationships. Thanks, Linda. So the program itself sits in that space. So somebody might come to the program, they might say, I would really like to have sex, and, you know, I don't really, if I'm catching what you said correctly, I don't necessarily want a relationship, but, like, I'd like to, you know, explore whether I can find a sex worker who's, am I on the right track with your, so I'd like to find a sex worker that I could go and see. Who's going to be, you know, a good person for me to be around and that's going to understand what I need. The same principle that I talked about, for example, with sexual health nurses applies in this setting. So it's about finding, saying, okay, well, so, you know, how would that happen? Who would that be? We don't engage with people to provide that sort of support work, but we'd then take that on and say, well, there's touching base, for example, or we'd contact people who might know the kind of answers to those specific things. So it's the principle of connecting people with the experts outside. Having said that, that's a question which generally comes from audiences like this and not from people with intellectual disability. So I don't see the same interest in that in our practice as I do in a kind of abstract question. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Hi. I'll pass it to you now. I just had a query. What sort of age range is it targeted for? And because I think it would be a really powerful program. So I've got a little daughter who's currently only like 1.5, but, you know, like, you know, when she gets older and sort of like that, instead of that sort of high school terrible sex education experience, sort of having like access to a program like this. And sort of how does that work?
So at the moment, people who come to our program are 18 and up. Because to be honest, there's a whole heap of moral panic around sex education or even the word sex around kids in schools, which the Safe Schools debate has just ignited to be a maelstrom. That's probably made us think we do need to expand the kind of work that we do to work in that space. So we don't at the moment, but we're working with a couple of partners to try and think about how we could bring peer education, which is really the most important bit of what we do, how we could bring peer education back to that environment. So graduates from a specialist school, you know, becoming peer educators, returning to the school, that kind of idea, but a politically much, much more charged environment than, you know, we're even currently in. So pretty challenging.
So I'm just interested in the content of the four sessions and, like, how much of it is focused on a violence prevention kind of message and how much of it might be focused on sexuality and gender education stuff.
So maybe we could tell people about the activities that we run or the themes for each of the days, and that will kind of give you a sense, I think. Unfortunately, in my experience, they're often difficult to disentangle.
Sure.
So that they are both, and to talk about one with people with intellectual disabilities to talk about the other. But the activities that we run, so you tell people about the rights cards.
We've got rights cards. We do dealing with danger cards.
Do you want to explain? We got those from Southeastern Centre Against Sexual Assault. That they make them. Do you want to tell people what they're about?
The danger cards, we do a little activity on that, like it could be like talk, like if someone like an example, like if someone was talking to you online, would you accept them or something if you know them, and if you go yes or no or not sure? Mm. So you can put it into them areas, mm-hmm. and that.
Mm. Or another one is like sending a nude photo.
Yeah. A text or something, picture or something.
Yep. Yep. Mm. What's another activity that we do?
We do the strength cards.
Yep.
Like sometimes we talk about our strengths in the program as well, like we could talk about ourselves, or sometimes with the strength cards we usually sometimes do it after a story and talk about the strength about that story. Mm-hmm. And that.
Mm-hmm. So as an example, there's a strength card that Linda always picks. We tell people about that one. For yourself?
Oh, there's one. It's more, it can be for myself or one of the stories, and it's always independence, because it's like in the story, because in these stories, like, people have got independence, they do what they want to do, and then it's like me, I do what I want to do. Mm. So I do my things, like go places everywhere. Mm. So I'm independent.
Yeah. Yep.
We do the relationship cards.
Oh, there's another, yeah, like relationship cards we usually do. That can go with one of the stories, because there's a couple in the program, like a couple, and that it's good for in the relationship, like we talk about very close or not close, and we can put certain cards in between. Mm-hmm. What they are, like example, like tongue kissing, would that go very close or not close? Mm. Or you might want it about the middle.
It's about intimacy,
so. Yeah. That's what they used to be called. Yeah. But it's, we changed the name.
So is there one right answer with those, or people might put it in different spots?
Well, a lot of people can put them wherever they are sure where they can put them, like, mm-hmm. That card wants to be in very close, it'll sit there. Or if it doesn't, it goes in about the middle or wherever, or up the other end. Mm. And if, like, and then when all the cards are down, we talk about all of them and that, and about that card, where you put it and that. And if you don't like where it is, you could move it to where you like it to be, because they might. You might be more sure, it might be better to go in that spot or...
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's not some kind of circles program, if you've seen that. So we don't tell people, that goes there. No, you're wrong, that's over there, do we? We all talk about, for some of those things, different things are intimate. Mm. So one that we talk about is sleeping together.
Yeah.
But not sex, like just actually physically sleeping together. Yeah. And for some people that's very intimate and close, and mm-hmm. and then other people are like, oh no, oh, if someone needs a place to stay, they can stay. Yeah, so we talk about how that different things create intimacies, although we've changed that word because it was too much of a tongue twister. between people. Another one that comes up there, and there are lots of sex acts as well, but another one that comes up is sharing secrets.
Mm-hmm. We're going to the movies.
Yeah, mm. Yep. And that sharing secrets idea can actually bring, is an example of how violence and abuse prevention and sexual expression or sexuality rights, you know, do this a lot, come together a lot. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, thank you. That was really helpful to give me a sense of it. Yeah. Thanks.
You're welcome to see our manual anytime. Linda's our expert at the manual, so she can
great.
Take you on a tour.
If she had it with her.
Any last brave questions? Or is there anything you wanted to add? Come on. Grace?
Oh,
there is one
more. Oh, we're gonna.
That's it. Don't be shy. It's only six.
I'm curious.
I'm curious if you work with people who have different disabilities as well as an intellectual disability, say autism and an intellectual disability.
So the program is run by sites in their local areas, and they advertise it in different ways according to what they think works in their community. And they say this is a program for people with intellectual disability to talk about rights in relationships. So anybody who looks at that and goes, oh yeah, that's me, comes along. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was also just curious, like, how many people are actually in the sessions, because it seems like you're having quite in-depth discussions, and I was wondering how you facilitate that.
Yeah, great one. So when we run the training, when we train sites to become peer educators, there's usually about...
We could have sometimes about 10 in the group.
8 to 10 usually.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm. And when the sites run the program, so we've trained the trainer model, when they run the program, they might have six to eight, you're right, time for people to have discussion and listen to each other is really important. And each session runs for about...
2 hours.
Hmm. Awesome, thank you.
Now they've got Jenny.
Hi, my name's Robin. I'm from Independent Family Advocacy and Support. I was curious about... people that might have conversations around contraception, and particularly when mainstream may be pushing particular forms of contraception onto people in the group, and then leading on from that, the conversations that may occur with people in the group around their rights to be a parent.
So one of the stories talks about contraception.
Yeah, we've got a story that talks about that, like, contraception, and she's like wants to have a kid and everything and that, and she does have one. Well, she was expecting one, but she has a miscarriage and that, and then she's like goes on the Deborah Ferro needle, but everyone think like everyone always when we do the program they always point to their arms like the rod all the time and that, so. We talk a bit about contraception a lot.
So if someone was in the group, Linda, and they said to you, say, oh, I want to know more about why I have to have this rod in my arm, what would you say to them?
Like, it's up to them if they want the rod in their arm. If they don't want it in their arm, they're just going to get pregnant. And that, and if they want to have be... a family and that. It's up to them if they want to fall pregnant or have the contraception or the things they usually have for contraception. Because we talk a lot about contraception and all about safe sex and stuff like that.
We talk about parenting too. What if people... What sort of things do people say when they talk about being a parent or wanting to be a parent?
Well, it might be good to be a parent, or some people might not want to be a parent. And that.
There's an excellent program done by the Speak Out self-advocacy organisation in Tassie, particularly the Sonia and the Women in Burnie.
Mothers Group.
Yep. And their push is support before report. I don't know if you've seen that, but I'd recommend that as a place to start looking about more useful and productive ways of engaging with people with intellectual disability who are parents. So we might talk about their work and your friends with Sonia and the kind of advocacy that she does with other women.
I know how she feels sometimes when she has her kids and that. Like, I remember when she said she was having problems with her daughter. She had been taken off her for a while, and then she fired it and she got her back, and that's, I know how she feels.
I've got time for one more question if anyone has one. I just had a query, actually. I'm a parent of teenagers, right? So this sort of stuff is really scaring me a little bit. But I was wondering if there were resources or programs available for parents of kids with disability to learn about their rights, exactly the same as children without disability, and how to have those conversations.
For parents of children with disability. Yeah, I think
I've
that...
Got one.
Oh, you've got one?
Yeah, my daughter's got a disability.
Yeah. And has there been stuff to help you know how to talk to her about sex and relationships?
I haven't got that far with her yet.
Yeah. I think it's back to Jackie Brown's reflection on the poor quality of education generally given to kids with disabilities, and particularly when it comes to talking about sex, because... Like, if I don't talk about it, it won't happen, or something weird. And I take your question on notice. I'm going to get back to you, Melissa, with some answers about resources that we use that are good for parents. But theoretically, the curriculum, the Victorian curriculum on respectful relationships, should include and target all children in Victorian schools. It doesn't, and that's a failing, and it's been a failing for a long time. But the answer should be that our kids are educated inclusively and in ways that are meaningful to them about respectful relationships, their rights and sexuality. But as I said, with the Safe Schools debacle, we've seen just how poorly done that can be and how politicised the space can be. So the answer is they should be doing it, but we've definitely got some stuff we can tell you about.
Well, I think it's definitely a fantastic start that you guys are starting these really, really important learning processes. That's wonderful. Oh, we've got one more question before we go to break.
Hi, Melissa. Just in response to that question, the Association for Children with a Disability have a resource on their website called Pep Talks, and it's about how to start the conversation with your child with a disability. There's a range of resources there that might be useful to parents who have a child with a disability. Because it will be about the full range of disabilities and not just cognitive disability as well, but that could be a place to start.
Not that I would.
So you can take the question off notice now because it's just been answered. So thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your work and sharing this quite fascinating stuff. And I think we've all really enjoyed hearing from you today. So we'll thank you very much. We'll go to a break. So if you can come back at 2:30, that'll be fantastic. See you then.